Welcome to the Circle Day show, and as you might be able to tell from my voice, it's not yet as normal. Anyone who was listening to the show a couple of months ago will know, we might recognise my voice. This is Donnacha DeLung and I'm filling in for Yodette. Tonight we're actually going to have a bit of a walk back through anarchist history, because amidst a lot of different anniversaries going on at the moment, one of the most important anniversaries is the 140th anniversary of the San Ymir Conference. And I'm joined by Nick Heath from the Anarchist Federation to talk about the importance of what happened 140 years ago and really having a look at what it meant for anarchist history from that point forward and really what it means to us today. Nick, can you tell us what happened in San Ymir 140 years ago?
Yeah, San Ymir is quite a small town in the French-speaking part of Switzerland. Actually, if you visit today, there's a very nice anarchist centre called Le Space Noir, the Black Space. It's got its own cinema, theatre, bookshop and cafe, so it's a nice little place. And strangely enough, you know, if you walk around the town, that the municipality seems quite proud that they held an anarchist congress there, because you can walk around and we've got these various plaques up with quite a lot of information as you walk around the streets. And there's this photo on these plaques are photos of Kropotkin, etc. They seem to be looking forward to it. They don't seem to be terrified of the fact that thousands of anarchists are going to turn up this year in August to celebrate the 140th anniversary. I'm not just talking about the past, which is, of course, is very important, but I'm talking about today's movement. And I think that's a sign of the resurgence of anarchism, that this can actually take place. So I'll talk later a bit more about what's going to happen at San Ymir in August. Going back to San Ymir itself and why it was important, we had to put it in the context of the creation of the first international, the first mass workers organization that developed in the 19th century, which of course Karl Marx was one of the people who helped found it. I mean, he wasn't the only one, but obviously the French socialists who were influenced by Proudhon, the sort of proto-anarchist, had a big effect on founding the First International. And I think really it shows the rift that happened within the workers' movement, within the socialist movement, between authoritarian methods of behaving, which is what happened with Marx, and people who rejected those forms of organisation and who also rejected political action. When anarchists talked about political action in those days, they meant getting involved in Parliament, and this is rejected at San Ymir.
And Bakunin and the Jura Federation, which were the main group that he was linked to in Switzerland, were the main driving forces in what happened in San Ymir and its continuation. And what was that influence perhaps in some ways a bit strong? Because one of the things that happened was a year after Bakunin died, that first attempt to create an anarchist international pretty much fell apart, and it took a few years to rebuild something. Do you think the movement at that time was a little bit focused too much on Bakunin, who was known as a very forceful personality?
I'm not sure that Bakunin was quite ill by then, and he was starting to drop out of activity, and he did fall out with some of the other people like James Guillaume. I think the driving forces were apart from the people around the Jura Federation, were the Italians and the French who also attended. The Italian Federation was developing. Italian anarchist section was developing very strongly then, and they had an input into San Ymir. I'm not sure that Bakunin had all that much influence on what became known as the Anti-Authoritarian International. You've got to remember that we have to look back at the Paris Commune, the great, one of the first great attempts to organise a new society in Paris in 1871, which was brutally crushed, with thousands of people killed, massacred in the streets by the French government, thousands more sent into exile. And we've got to look at the period of repression which followed after that. And I think that was one of the things that influenced Karl Marx himself. He got into a frame of mind, into a sort of siege mentality, because there was repression all over Europe, and he thought he had to start centralising the First International, which up to then have been organised on federal system, and he wanted to keep control of it, and in order to do so, he wanted to exclude people he saw as his opponents, like Bakunin and James Guillaume. He was a French-Swiss anarchist who was very important in this context, and they were actually thrown out of the International, which led to horror in a lot of different sections of the International. But also, he started pushing this idea that the International be involved in political action. So it didn't just horrify anarchist sections in the First International. It worried socialists in Belgium, who also had doubts about parliamentary action, and even the English trade unionists, who were always a little bit dubious about being involved in running for parliament.
And of course, it didn't last much longer after that expulsion anyway.
No. Well, neither of the sections of the International lasted very long after that. Karl Marx, he actually removed the General Council of the First International. He moved it to America. Which is where, I mean, there was an American section actually was opposed to Marx's ideas. But he moved it away from where most of the sections of the International were organised. So basically, it withered on the vine. And obviously, this first attempt to set up a libertarian international, an anti-authoritarian international itself, petered out after a couple more years. But it was, in some ways, it renewed itself over the years with the development of various attempts at creating other anarchist internationals as well.
As things moved into the 1880s, into the 1890s, yes, a bit of a split on tactics started to emerge between different kinds. There was the emergence of the propaganda by deed movement, who engaged in a number of assassinations. And depending on the level, I think, of state involvement and the use of agents provocateurs, there were a number of cases of more indiscriminate bombings, particularly in Paris. And on the other side, you saw the genesis of workers' movements, which ultimately became the syndicalists and the anarcho-syndicalist trade unions, particularly in Spain and Italy. How much do you think this made it difficult to organise together? The black, so-called Black International in the 1880s didn't really last much beyond that.
No, it didn't. But I mean, I think that's a bit much of a polarisation. As I mentioned earlier, there was a period of great repression in Europe at that time. You talk about the way that some anarchists responded by throwing bombs. You've got to remember that the workers' movement was more or less banned. Unions were banned until another, 10-12 years after the Paris Commune. A lot of people were still in exile, and people like Peter Kropotkin, who developed anarchist ideas. So he moved from he was one of the people who moved anarchism away from collectivism towards anarchist communism. He was in some ways responding to the situation. He talked about small groups. He's one of those who talked about small groups. But later on, he himself welcomed the development of syndicalism and anarcho-syndicalism. So it was partly the conditions that that determined that those sort of small group and what you call propaganda by the deed politics. I mean, originally, just to say, propaganda by the deed meant any action that demonstrated the anarchist idea. It didn't originally mean throwing a bomb, which a minority of anarchists did. It meant strikes, occupations of town halls, all of those sorts of things, occupations of the land.
And figures like Emma Goldman and Malatesta went through a similar kind of change in the way they moved, largely in response to growing workers' movements, because as you entered the beginning of the last century, you actually started to see the industrial workers of the world in the US, the CGT in France, the CNT in Spain.
Sure.
And, this is another anniversary that's going to be coming up next year, because actually the next big attempt to start to create an international happened here in London, which was 1913. And it was on the auspices of syndicalism and trying to create a syndicalist international.
Sure.
And how important do you think...
Which is also stillborn, yes. Partly because of the First World War.
Yes, exactly. Once some things moved into the First World War, most workers' movements were destroyed.
Yes.
What do you think was within that? While it was still born in 1913, it was obviously hugely influential then in the 1920s, when the last big attempt to create an international at that point, which was to recreate the International Workers Association, which actually involves some of the same figures. It's actually, looking back through the history, it's actually unfortunate Rudolf Rocker wasn't actually in London when the syndicalists were meeting, because that would have been a main link of between the two. He was actually touring the USA. But what do you think allowed the movement to actually start to become truly internationalist after the First World War? We didn't have an absence of repression. Repression continued. But the life of the movement actually started to take a grip at that point. How do you think this was done? How do you feel this was done? And how do you think that version of the IWA has actually managed to continue, not as a huge organisation, but as an organisation that has been going for 80, 90 years at this point?
I think it was partly in response to the setting up of the communist, the Bolshevik-controlled Comintern. And Profintern, what was called the RILU, the Red International Labour Unions, and it was felt by anarchists and anarcho-syndicalists to create their own international in opposition to the one that was controlled by the Russian Communist Party. I think in many ways that was a reason. I mean, you've got to remember it evolved under very difficult circumstances as well. Fascism took over not very long after the end of the First World War, and fascist regimes started developing a lot of countries throughout Europe, and the situation in America wasn't much better, with this massive repression against the workers' movement there, with the Palmer raids in the aftermath of the First World War, and mass deportations from America of many activists back to Europe.
Including Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman.
Including Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, yes.
So to move forward to today, as a member of the Anarchist Federation, you're part of a different international, which is the International of Anarchist Federations.
Yes.
How does that, since 1968, that's kind of run in parallel with the IWA. What's the difference between the two, and why do you think there are two different international groups for anarchists at the moment? Major ones. There's more than two, obviously.
Yes, there are others as well, and I'll talk about that later. I mean, first of all, just let me say that the International Anarchist Federation, the IAF or the IFA, depending which language you speak, always considers the IWA as a sister organisation, and so they're always observers from mutual observers at the different conferences of the IFA and the IWA. So it's not as if we see ourselves as rivals. Mm-hmm. The differences are that one represents anarcho-syndicalist organisations, some of which are quite small, just really propaganda groups, some of which are large, and the other, and the IAF, represents specific anarchist organisations. The International Anarchist Federation was founded at Carrara, which is celebrated town where they quarry marble. In fact, Michelangelo, I think he worked there for a while. And Carrara marble is very famous, but it's also a famous stronghold of anarchism. It still is. I've visited the town several times, and there still is that influence there amongst the marble workers. It came in a year of great unrest, 1968, obviously, and it had the same sort of troubles, the first Congress. So people like Daniel Cohen-Bendit, who is, if you know his history, became a complete sellout, attended and attempted to disrupt it, because he was at that time he was an anarchist, but he was opposed to all forms of organisation, and he was actually quite disruptive at that first Congress. And in many ways, what happened at Carrara in 68 reflected what was going on within the movement then. And for years, it represented three or four groups: Spanish Anarchist Federation, the Italian Anarchist Federation, the French Anarchist Federation, and of course the Bulgarian Anarchist Federation, which because of the repression in Bulgaria from the Stalinist regime there, was basically an exile organisation. Now those four groups are still part of the International Anarchist Federations, but we in the Anarchist Federation of Britain decided to go into this international some years ago, and have an input into it. And at the same time, we encouraged, I think, you know, we had quite an influence on the international, and we brought other groups into it who were on our wavelength. So the number of different organisations in different countries has increased over the years, especially with the development of anarchist organisations in Eastern Europe. So you've got the Anarchist Federation in Slovenia, who attends the conferences and is going to join, and groups in Czechoslovakia and in Belarus, etc.
Just for those listening who might not be that cognizant of the difference, how would you define the difference between anarcho-syndicalist organisations and specifically anarchist organisations?
Well, there are different types of specific anarchist organisation. Ours is based on anarchist communism. We're a specific anarchist communist organisation. Some of the other groups in the international wouldn't necessarily define themselves as such. For example, the French Anarchist Federation calls itself Synthesis. It tries to synthesise different currents within anarchism. In effect, we can work with them because we are all social anarchists. That is, we define ourselves as based on class struggle, based on opposition to things like patriarchy, and involvement in all the social movements. So, if you like, all of the groups within the International Anarchist Federations are social anarchists, and they recognise the importance of class struggle anarchism. And in opposition to the anarchos, well, not in contrast to the IWA, the anarcho syndicalist international, which is an organisation of anarcho syndicalist unions, so much broader in a lot of ways, and not everyone might necessarily call themselves anarchists within those organisations. The old IWA it had a mass membership because some of those anarcho-syndicalist unions were quite large, but I would doubt if every member of those anarcho-syndicalist unions was necessarily a conscious anarchist, whereas everyone in the International Anarchist Federations is a conscious anarchist.
Okay, so moving up to today, what's the relevance of all this and what's happening this year?
Well, what's happening this year with the anniversary is there's going to be a huge event for several days in Sanimir, which I talked about earlier on, and thousands of people are going to be there from all over the world. There's going to be all sorts of debates. There's going to be a banquet, which I imagine we'll be sitting around at trestle tables, several hundred, thousands of us eating a meal, with probably lots of cheap wine, and there'll be lots of singing and lots of merriment, I should hope. Judging from previous international meetings I've been to, there'll be concerts, there'll be some really great singers there, and also choirs, anarchist choirs as well. There'll be plays, there'll be exhibitions, and it's not just the International of Anarchist Federations is having its congress, which overlaps at the same time, but the International Workers Association is also invited. All the groups of the International Workers Association are invited, and hopefully are participating. And also the groups inside this current called Anarchismo will also be attending, and they are contributing to the conference as well. The Anarchismo current represents some syndicalist groups that are outside of the IWA, and various platformist and specifismo groups as well. I mean, I can tell you what they are if you will.
I think that's probably more information than anyone listening will be able to handle. I suppose the big question for anyone listening, how can they find out more about this and how they might get there?
Right. There is a website, which just Google it for the Sanimir International. You'll find all the information about all the events. It's still evolving as they update it. And it'll tell you how to get there. There'll be accommodation in campsites, and they're also the town is lending the anarchists the various sports centres and gymnasiums where people can sleep. And probably the best way of getting there is to go to Geneva, get a cheap flight to Geneva, and then either hitchhike and then if you go by airport, you can get the train down to Sanimir, and it's a very efficient train service. You've got all the details there anyway. It's going to be quite an amazing event. It's probably the most important event in anarchist history, at least in my lifetime anyway.
And Anarchist Federation, how can people find out more about that if they want to get more involved?
Obviously, we've got a group in London, and we meet on a regular basis. And you can look at the AFED site. So you can Google the AFED site, www.afed.org.uk. and find out information about us there. And we're going to be holding a series of meetings around Britain over the next couple of months to publicise St Imier. So we're going to have a public meeting about St Imier on May 19th in London. So there's details on our websites and on various other anarchist boards. And we're going to have meetings right around the country in England and in Scotland. In fact, there's going to be two meetings coming up, one in Glasgow and one in Edinburgh, tomorrow and the day after.
And something else that's coming up very soon is May Day. Yes. So what are AFED going to be doing on May Day?
Well, we'll be collaborating with Comrades from Solidarity Federation. We hope to have a joint social in the evening. So if people want to come along to that, just contact us and we'll give you the information about it.
Any plans for the day itself?
Well, we'll...
Okay, I'd just like to say thank you very much for Nick.
Yes, thanks to you for having me on the programme.
Very welcome. Yeah. Obviously, we'll put up links to the AFED site and to the St Imier commemoration gathering feast and general partying on the Circle Day website. So thank you very much for coming along, and as far as I know, the listeners will have Yodette back next week. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope you've learned something about anarchism and are more keen about getting involved in the future. Thank you.